Today on Rainbow Country, my final segment featuring Indie Week, Music Festival, and Conference, plus Growing Up Gay and Black, Part 1. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio Toronto Style right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, I'm Garrett Conley, author of Boy Erased, a memoir. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Everyone, and welcome to Rainbow Country, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country, I'm Mark Tara. This is episode 181. Today, my final segment featuring Indie Week, Music Festival, and Conference, featuring Thor Simonson, artist, entrepreneur, and creative director of Hitmakers, a Nunavut-based record label, plus a PR expert, an activist, a fashion designer, and myself. Together, we'll share our personal stories about growing up gay and black. But up first, Indie Week, Music Festival, and Conference.
I'm the young pope, so I only through the biblical. If rapper were illegal, be a death row criminal. I'm physically minimal, my mentality mythical. You're pitiful, so typical, my guess is indivisible. No one goes invisible, remedy and medicinal. Despicable, atypical, cut you off like umbilical. If you talk the talk, you're gonna end up with the critical. Pop, 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 and then you drop, that's a reciprocal. I am not political, I just play with syllables. A John play with bonds, I'm the Don of metaphysical. A little egotistical, but also analytical. I look around at every other rapper doing minimal. I can't fucking stand it, how's he gonna manage? When a real rapper step is looking to do some damage. I'm back again, I'm backing it up on this beat, I'm dancing. They're chanting and they're chanting.
Working like a slave, but I'm self-made. All these haters hate me, stay out of my way. Jelly on my bread, because I'm getting paid. Plays getting played, that'll be the day. All these fakers wanna make up, but they're getting lame. Thinking you hot, I want it to the flame. Propane, insane. Northern knowledge in your brain. Got me thinking that I'm really done. See, I'm gonna be done until I hit number one. If you're in my way, I just stick with it and beat you like you a drum. They hype you up, and you believe it like you was dumb. Young homie, not smarten up.
He is an international artist, entrepreneur seeking meaningful ways to improve the modern world through knowledge, through art, through media, through clear communication. He is Thor Simonson. Hi.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing great.
This is Indie Week happening. This is my first time. How are you? How many Indie Weeks have you been to?
This is my first as well.
What do you think of it?
It's a little bit overwhelming. I got straight off the train and took an Uber straight to the conference, and there are so many people to talk to, and I don't know who is who, and I don't know what to say, and there's so many things going on, but it's awesome.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Frank.
Yes.
Let's start here. Hitmakers, you are the creative director?
Yeah, so Hitmakers is a Nunavut-based record label. which focuses primarily on Inuit pop music. And our goal is to create sustainable careers in the arts for people in Nunavut.
Yangi, your new record that's out now. Talk to me about this record. It's a record with a purpose. How did this project come about?
So at Hitmakers, a lot of what we do is we do workshops in very remote communities across Arctic Canada. And we teach songwriting, we do language strengthening and cultural workshops. And we also teach music production. And we donate a studio to each of these very remote, very small communities that you have to fly 2 hours to get to them, and then there's 200 people. And through doing these workshops, we found that there's a huge amount of talented Nunavummiut who, through the challenges of living in Nunavut, aren't able to share their stories and their music and their culture with a broader audience. So with Ayungi, we put out a call for demos, and we asked many Nunavut artists to submit songs, hooks, instrumentals, whatever they had. And we brought them all together. We flew them to Iqaluit to record, and we put together this cohesive album called Ayungi. And the purpose of the album is really to showcase each of the artists. And eventually, we want these artists to launch their own careers and to come back to Hitmakers and help us teach the next generation of artists.
So, Ayungi, 12 songs, 19 artists. How did you decide what songs made it? How did you decide what artists you would work with?
The process, I mean, we decided to work with many different artists. So some of the artists do have a little bit of traction. There's artists like Kelly Fraser, Angela Amorwalik, and Asiva, all of whom have been nominated for awards, and they've done a little bit of touring. But then we wanted to contrast that with artists who are just starting out, who've never been in a recording studio before. I remember we had one artist, he arrived in Iqaluit on a blizzard day, and he was so excited to come and record that he walked through the blizzard in just his hoodie, and he showed up ready to record.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Why do this project? What inspired this project?
So, I moved to Nunavut when I was 7. My family's originally from Scandinavia, and I've always been able to see this cultural divide between Inuit culture, Western Canadian culture, and my own European culture. And as a music producer, my job has been to bring out the message and the sound from the music that I'm working on, and to help the artist express themselves. And by understanding all of these different cultures, I think I can translate the message through that universal language. So Ayungi is really just an extension of that work. It's putting together different artists on different genres and just making sure that it's really awesome.
You produced the record?
Myself, and then we had an additional producer named Bar Haberg in Scandinavia help finish it off.
And there's a mental health aspect to the record? Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so we realized that most of the songs had to do with some form of mental health. And, I mean, with the, you know, the suicide crises going on and a lot of welfare, and there's a lot of socioeconomic problems in Nunavut. And so, naturally, a lot of the songs reflected that. So what we decided to do was take a portion of the sales and donate it to the local helpline. It's called the Kamatsiak Nunavut Helpline, which is a place you can call if you're feeling down and just need someone to talk to. And this is a line that I've been a part of it when I was in high school, and I know that it has a pretty big impact there.
So, in doing some research on you, you're a DJ, you're a visual artist. In 2016, you put out Entrepreneur Nunavut Edition. You were on the cover. And on the cover it says, Canada's Coolest Millionaire. Talk to me about this image and why you put this out.
So, ironically, this was fake news before fake news was a thing. And ironically, it's part of a...
Well, 2016.
It's 2016, but it was before that term got used.
Okay.
And ironically, it's part of a blog called Donald Trump and the Death of Critical Thinking. And it really was just to sort of show on my blog that people, you know, they'll see something and automatically they'll, you know, if it's visual and unless there is counter evidence right away and very impactful, you know, people, they see things and they believe them, they take them at face value. And so one of my big things is I really encourage critical thinking. I want people to question things. I want them to challenge things. But that I call it a meme, but some people just call it my picture. It sort of caught on, and so I still get compliments and I get questions about it. And it's, as part of a visualization tool, I totally believe it's going to happen. And then I'll make a whole story about how I put it out. It wasn't real, but then I made it real to match the story.
Once you make your first million.
Exactly.
Fantastic. Okay, how can people find out about you, about your projects, all that sort of stuff?
So the album is called Ayungi, and there's a website, ajungi.ca, ayungi.ca. And we also, if they're interested in the label, it's just hitmakers with a z.ca.
Well said. Okay, before I let you go, three quick questions.
Sure.
Red or white?
Red.
Day or night?
Day.
Producer or artist?
Producer.
Well said. Well said.
I know. Well, I started producing more because I had a manager who correctly told me that I was more interesting as a producer, which was painful at the time. But looking back, I realized he was right. I can bring out the best in people because I see so much goodness and I see so much quality in the music that people do make. They just need to polish it and frame it and show it in the right way.
Well said. Thor Simonsen, thank you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Transformation, a change of our hearts and minds. This is human revolution. We all have the power to change. When we realize this truth, we can bring that power anywhere, anytime, in any situation. Cause many small people in small places doing small things can change the world. You can change the world with your talents. It just takes courage and learning how to use them. You can really change the world if you care enough. Together, we can do many great things. Together, do many great things.
I'll be good, and I'll change the world like I should. I don't care if anybody else is helping me out. This is what I'm about. We're gonna change the world.
Great things. Together, we can do many great things.
I'm recording artist Corey Stewart, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
To find out more about Thor Simonsen, Hitmakers, Nunavut-based record label, and his current record, A Youngie, just go to thorsimonsen.com. Up next, part one of Growing Up Gay and Black. He works in the world of PR, fashion, writing. He is Max McDonald. Hello, Max.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
It's wonderful to see you again.
Thank you. It's good to see you too, girl. Fashion designer, photographer. He is Mikey Sin. Hello, Mikey Sin.
Hello, Mark.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I had a full day today. Came from a fitting for an upcoming shoot, and now I'm here.
Gay, black, futurist, activist. He is Colin Johnson. Hi.
Hello. How are you today?
How are you doing?
I am excellent.
You have never been on Rainbow Country before.
No, I haven't, actually.
Thanks for being here. Max, you have, and Mikey, you have.
Yeah.
I want to start with you, Colin, and I want you to, if you can, in a nutshell, tell us about Colin Johnson.
I identify as a black gay man who is living with HIV, has been for 37 years. I have over the years been an advocate, not just for gay rights, but for black rights. In my case, they're both intertwined. I don't think you can separate my blackness from my gayness. An immigrant, I have worked on boards through various ASOs.
What does that mean?
Aid service organizations.
Okay.
I've volunteered, been a client for the most part, one important aspect is that I lost all my friends to the AIDS epidemic.
Hmm.
And that sort of changed my out.
For sure.
And to that end, I will constantly try to fight for not just equality for persons who are black, but also to remove the stigma and discrimination that attends those of us who still live with HIV.
Well said. Mikey Sin, you've been on Rainbow Country before. You and I covered Fan Expo 2019.
That's correct.
That was an interesting experience.
Oh, it was. A lot of walking.
Yes. What have you been up to since?
Since we worked together then, I think, and this might be a question on people's minds that know me, and in the beginning of the year, I had a pop-up shop, had a mini fashion collection come out, and after some time, I had to really think about it, and I had to go back into hibernation with it. It was not ready, so I've been working on that behind the scenes, and the big announcement is that it will be coming for spring 2020. I have not talked about this at all anywhere, so this is a first. And I'm excited to get that out there. Also working on a few different photo shoots at the moment.
Max McDonald, you've been on Rainbow Country before. What have you been up to recently?
Well, I've been trying to stay out of trouble, but my friends just won't let me. So since I was last here, I have been to World Pride / Stonewall 50. Mm. And that literally, I can tell you right now, when the plane took off from Newark on July the 2nd, I was a completely different person when I arriving at Pearson.
You were different how?
I was different because a lot of the things that we see here that are important to us didn't really matter in New York. Mm. And it was about the love. I got to one of the biggest things I got to see. I got to meet Dr. Ruth, which was like a lifelong dream to be able to do. I got to meet the cast of Pose. And I also got to see how the very first transgendered, and I gotta get this right, transgendered South Asian police force from India. And they made the cover of the New York Times. And if you actually Google it, you can see it. And there was one of them who actually fell to the ground on Fifth Avenue. And it was a man who had transitioned to a woman. And everyone said, oh my God, what had happened? And he said, I had never felt so welcome or so free in my life. And it was so overwhelming that I had to actually just stop. Mm. And I can't even describe the amount of love and the amount of people who came from all over the world just to be a voice, right, and just to be able to say, we're here. But the caveat is, we have come so far, but we have so much farther to go. So much farther to go. And since then, my mother doesn't even know this, and I'm sure my mother's going to listen to this. So, Mom, I wanted to tell you this in person, but I just got accepted for my Master's of Science in Integrated Marketing Communication. So my specialty is going to be in digital media and creative strategy for the LGBTQ consumer.
Wow.
So I'm going to be actually looking at the whole history of LGBTQ consumerism, mm-hmm, but also I'm going to be looking at where it is now and where it is going. Because, for example, there are brands like Tiffany, American Express, Air Canada, Virgin Airlines that are all sitting there and highlighting all these different LGBTQ programs they had. Like, for example, Virgin had its first all-gay flight nonstop from London to I think it was JFK. And what I want to find out is, what did that do for the community? Mm. I want to start asking questions about, so Marc Jacobs is gay, so he designs a collection. What now? Mm. What does that mean? How does that translate to the movement being able to go forward? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, what's coming up in the future for Max McDonald.
Well, exactly.
Speaking of future, Colin Johnson, you call yourself a futurist?
Yes.
What does that mean?
So a futurist is someone who believes that humanity will survive with the use of technology, the various disciplines that we now have, sociology, psychology, the understanding of how people interact. It's been around for quite a long while. Jules Verne, theoretically, was a futurist. Isaac Asimov is definitely a futurist. We don't believe that humanity is limited because of what we can achieve. Mm. It's a very positive force. It tends to be more of a social event than a political event, but that might change considering how things are going. But we also accept that human rights are part and parcel of the whole program of us moving forward. So we embrace all concepts, all peoples.
Being a futurist, is that something that you studied?
No. So actually, to be honest with you, most of the concepts of futurism actually came out of the whole science fiction milieu. So a lot of writers who were looking for technological progression, Gene Roddenberry of Star Trek was a futurist. Yeah. So the list is awesome. So there is the World Futurist Society, and I'm a part of that.
Wow.
So we actually have conventions. They're held all around the world. There are also magazines that we subscribe to. We get a reading list that's sent to us for us to look. So for example, one of the concepts of transhumanism, which is we are embodying technology with humans to make a better, quotation marks, person. So all of that comes out of futurism.
Do you ever see a point where we as humans start embedding technology into our bodies?
Oh, definitely. And I have no problems with that. I mean, to be honest with you, we actually do in a way now. We actually carry cell phones everywhere. I mean, you might as well call it being a part of you. I mean, I literally know people who actually sleep with their cell phones. Mm. So yeah, in many ways we are getting to that.
Right.
The concepts of using chips, advanced AI to enhance our thinking ability and to memorize. Mm-hmm. Yes, most definitely. For a lot of people, there is an ethical question as whether this is something that we should do and not lose our humanity. I think it's important for us to move forward as time goes on and use tech. I mean, one of the issues is technology can be used for good or bad. Mm-hmm. It's a neutral thing. Mm-hmm. How we decide to use it, that's what I think makes it a better different.
Mikey Sin, in 2018, you were part of the 10x10 Photography Project.
Yeah.
An annual exhibition and book celebrating LGBTQ people who have contributed to the arts in Canada. How was that experience for you?
Overall, it was an amazing experience because I learned so much. I got to work with a lot of different people. The hard part was the short amount of time that I had to create 10 shoots in February, and our deadline was April. I'm known for doing a lot of outdoor shoots on location, so that made it tricky. And I wanted to bring certain friends aboard to bring light to them. And an important part of my series was to bring different ethnic backgrounds of culture to my series. Mm. And I felt that I did manage to achieve that. And towards the end, so much stuff happened last minute. I pitched all these ideas because I didn't want it just to be photos hanging on the wall. I have so many artistic ideas. So for certain reasons, which were understandable, weren't foreseeable to execute. But then maybe 4 days before the opening night, the founder, James Fowler, threw a few ideas at me that would work. So I just had to go home and race to make it happen.
Yeah.
And it was like literally 5 p.m. It starts at 6. And I am still putting these art installation part of my exhibit to the photos. But for some reason, it always feels like that when I'm working on something so big because there's so much to do that it actually just feels comfortable. If I had 3 hours to stand around before, I'm like, okay, well, what else could I be doing? Yeah. I don't do well with empty time. I like to keep busy and keep going.
Well done. I was there. And
yeah, that's right.
It was great. Great event.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
Max McDonald, in 2019, the early part of 2019, you represented Deborah Cox and Damian Marley at the 10th Annual University of the West Indies Toronto Benefit Gala.
You were there.
I was there. How was that experience working that event? What was that like for you?
Okay, well, keeping with the theme of today, I have to say that it wasn't just me. It was also my dear friend Vince, mm-hmm. who runs Charlo Communications. And I'm always his right hand at the gala. It's different, and I hate to say this, it's a little bit different when you're working with the University of the West Indies. Because Vince is Maltese and he comes off as Caucasian. Mm-hmm. And then I come thundering in behind him and all of a sudden you see everybody stand up and go, oh, it's one of us. It's one of us. And so I was able to, as you saw, be able to kind of herd Deborah Cox over and nobody's kind of said anything because it's like, oh, well, he works for Vince. He's good. He's good. So I kind of hurdled the Deborah Cox over, and as well as Damian Marley. Damian Marley, this is an insider secret, but Damian Marley actually didn't want to do interviews. And it was actually you, Mark, that actually kind of got him, because I kind of put you in front of him. And once you started doing them, all of a sudden all the other media started doing them with him. And it was kind of me and Vince going up to him going, look, you are here. You need to do these interviews. If you don't do these interviews, you're going to come across as being one of these stuck up artists. Mm. So he realized that. But I guess it also had more power coming from me. But Vince tries, but Vince has to be 6 million places, as you've seen. So
it was a great event.
It was. It was a great event.
Well said, everyone. On that note, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Bill 7, to ban discrimination in employment, government services, and housing based on a person's sexual orientation was up for a vote at Queen's Park. Most NDP and Liberal MPPs supported the bill. But without some progressive conservative legislators backing, a divisive split could rack the province. Four PCs decided to break party ranks to vote with their conscience and support Bill 7. Cabinet Minister and MPP Dennis Timbrell did it to show solidarity for his beloved brother, the well-known drag queen, Rusty Ryan. And for me, a gay politician who was not yet out, I had to take a stand. We were known as the Gang of Four. I'm former Cabinet Minister and MPP Phil Gillies. The date, December 2nd, 1986, when LGBT rights came to Ontario.
This is Brad Fraser, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Identity. I'm always interested in how people identify themselves, especially when it comes to their ethnicity. For me, I don't necessarily identify as Black. I identify as multiracial. I am part Black. I am part Irish. I am part West Indian. That's me. I'm curious to know how you guys choose to identify. And Colin Johnson, how do you identify yourself?
Okay, so that question for me depends on where I am and who I'm speaking with. So if I am in the straight world, I identify as gay. And if I am in the Black community, I identify as gay and somebody living with HIV. I think it's important to make people understand what is crucial for my identity depending on where I am. Mm-hmm. And that does change. If I'm in the HIV community, obviously I am somebody who's living with HIV, but that also works for me in the non-HIV community because I want to have those conversations with these people. So overall, I think when in final analysis, I see myself as gay first, Black secondly, because I'm clearly visibly Black, and somebody living with HIV. Mm. So and that's why I do it. Yeah.
Mikey Sin, how do you choose to identify yourself?
I think how I choose to identify myself is in two ways, both Trinidadian, but then I was born here, so I am Canadian. But growing up, especially in Parkdale, it was always a vast mix of backgrounds and cultures. So learning about that and just growing up and being young and having a moldable open mind, I felt I adapted to so many different cultures, and I feel the same way now. It just takes me back to being a kid, and I love learning about cultures, religion, language studies, ancient history. And this is just stuff that I do on my own. I don't really talk too much about. It's just, for my own learning. But then I've also been able to take those interests and cultural backgrounds and adapt it to my photography, film work. And there's a little hint of what's going to come next year that I'm working on right now that I'm not going to talk about too much. But as it gets closer, you'll find it. But there's a lot of little bits and pieces out on my social media.
Max McDonald, how do you choose to identify yourself?
Well, I'm a little different than both Mikey and Colin, because not looking, if you were to see me down the street, you would think, oh, there's a 6-foot black man. I actually don't identify as black. I actually am biracial. And so I have, this question has gone on between, like, for example, Halle Berry had this whole conversation on CNN. Lenny Kravitz had this whole conversation on CNN. And so finally, I kind of settled on a very old-fashioned term. And I know it's going to raise hairs, but this is how I choose to identify myself. I choose to identify myself as a dark-skinned mulatto. Mm-hmm. Because I am not black. I am not white. Because my mother is Jamaican and my father is Scottish. And I, especially now, with everything and everybody claiming that they're everything, I sit there and I say, well, this is who I am. And they say, well, that's not right. No, you cannot tell me who I'm going to be. Mm-hmm. When you call yourself this, I respect that. Mm-hmm. You have to respect how I call myself. And with that being said, answering the other part of your question, I also identify myself as a very openly gay man, very openly, like, hello, let's make a deal behind door number two. And, you know, I've never had a problem with being openly gay. Now, other people in my life may have, but, you know, they don't count. They're not here.
It's interesting because you and I are both on the same track. When people always, growing up, people have always asked, what's your background? What's your background? What's your background? And I'm like, I'm this, that, and the other. I'm mixed. I'm multicultural and all this sort of stuff.
Try when you were going out to a mall, like Yorkdale or Sherway back in the 80s, and you're holding your father's hand because you're, what, 10, 11 years old, and someone comes up to you and goes, are you adopted? Complete stranger comes up and goes, are you adopted?
Yeah.
I go, not as far as I know. And they say, well, that can't be your father. He's white. Mm. And there was actually a very interesting study, just on a quick side note, about biracial children. And they actually showed a woman who, a blonde hair, blue eyed woman who had kids with an African man. The kids came out black. Mm. And that threw every, I guess you call them genealogist, off the charts, because they're going, well, they should be caramel. And so now there's this whole physiology around, well, if you're a biracial child and you come out black, you know, it's just, I'm not going to get into the whole thing because that's a whole different show. But the thing is at the end of the day, it's who I am. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to deny my Scottish heritage or my Jamaican heritage.
And I think that's the key. For me, I am the sum of all my parts. And I think the same with yourself, right? And with all of us here, we are the sum of all of our parts, whether it's, you know, ethnically based or racially based or sexually based or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk about coming out. I have never out to – girl, I have never –
behind door number two.
I have never come out to my family. Surprise, surprise. I'm kind of gay. I was born in the Caribbean, came here when I was really young. You know, the Caribbean's known to be very homophobic. And like I said, never came out to my family. I'm curious to know, Colin Johnson – did you ever come out to your family?
Definitely.
And how was the response?
So I moved from Jamaica to Canada in 1972. And that was when I came out as being gay. So I started to go downtown. And then one evening I had gone out to a very infamous bar called St. Charles. And when I got back home at about 3 a.m, my father sort of, had a good night. And I just looked at him and said, yeah, I was downtown at a gay bar. And he said, oh, yes, we know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was the sum total.
Okay.
For me, I think I was, we'd always had discussions about sexuality and, you know, my parents actually did speak about sex.
Really?
So they were quite different in that sense. But I think I was concerned about how my father, being an elder Jamaican man, would have accepted his firstborn being gay. It turned out that my father was far more accepting than my mom, which really surprised me. When I discovered that I was HIV positive, it took me a couple of weeks before I actually sat my father down and told him. And his actual response was, "What can you do to help?" I was 25 years old and I broke down crying. But that is not the normal route of somebody who is black and gay. And I know that for a fact. I think my parents were somewhat unique.
Let alone Caribbean.
Yeah, in overall. And, you know, I'm always grateful for that. Even when my father realized that I was getting very political and advocating in the movement, I always had his support and his backing. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. Max McDonald, what about you?
Okay. My coming out was very, very Dynasty. It was not the new Dynasty, that crappy show on Netflix, the old school Dynasty. And basically this is what it was. I was 16 years old. I had packed two suitcases and I had them in the hall in the house. And my mother looked at it and she said, "Where are you going?" And I said, "Mom, Dad, I need to tell you something." And they said, "Okay, what is it?" And they said, I said, "I'm gay." And I said, now I had a family friend. His name was Tom and he was gay. And my parents stopped speaking to him 3 weeks before I came out. So I said, "Okay, I better do this now and just get this out of the way." And my mother looked at me and she said, "Why are your suitcases packed?" And I said, "Well, I know you two may have a problem with this, so I'm staying at the Four Seasons for a week." And my mother went, "No." And I said, "What?" And she said, "Oh, honey, we know you're gay, but you're not staying at the Four Seasons for a week, because if you do, we'll never get you out." And I said, "What?" And they said, "Yes." Now, the flip side of it, just like what Colin had said, I didn't realize that evening my mother went up to her room and she started crying for 3 days. Now, my mother is now my biggest supporter and I love her dearly. And my father was the one that really helped her understand where I was going. And, you know, again, I don't know what Mikey's experience was, and he'll tell you in a minute. But for some reason, when it comes to boys, West Indian mothers have such a hard time accepting it. It's like we've died, like a part of us. And I remember going into my mother's room and saying, "Mom, I'm still going to get married." Oh, God. That's a whole different show. Oh, Lord. And then I'm still going to have children. But I said, it's going to be with a man. There's going to be no changes. And, you know, and very much, I was very much the Dynasty coming out. No word of a lie. It's like there was a hotel involved. I was going to leave the Carrington Ranch, everything. And that didn't happen. You know, I basically went upstairs, threw my clothes back in the closet and started watching TV. And that's it.
Yeah. Wow. You know, it's funny because for me, like I said, for me, I never came out officially. I remember having this one conversation with a friend of mine, and the night before we had been to David Balfour Park, a very cruisy park. Mm-hmm. Park sex is not for me. I am not about that. I like my amenities. So I was there for my friend. I wasn't there to partake. So we're talking on the phone and my sister was listening on the extension. And then she started going, "Oh, he's gay. He's gay." And I'm like, "Oh Lord, shit's going to hit the fan now." So then I just like put my clothes together, got dressed, got out the door and came back a few hours later and never spoke of it again, because families are weird. Well, and dynamics are weird.
Can I just jump in for a second? So, and I'll be interested to hear what Mikey has to say. But then when I, and I don't know if Colin went through this, but when I had to come out again, when I reunited with my Jamaican family, and, but the thing was, is that I did not, that was not the Dynasty one. That was the Kill Bill coming out, where I basically zipped up the yellow tracksuit, went in and said, I hear Batty Man out of any one of you, and the machete you first and ask question later. And they sat there and they went, no, 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 we love you, we love you. And I said, no, and I said, no, I don't want to hear it. And I said, end of discussion. I said, I'm gay, and if you, one word, and you're missing a finger.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was the thing, and that was the difficult coming, sorry, that was the difficult coming out, because when you come out to your family here, it's easy. When you come out to your extended family, especially from when they're in the West Indies, it's a whole different ball of wax. So,
yeah, I'll agree with that. My my parents, as I say, were cool. On my extended family, most of my uncles and aunts had no issue with it. And I, the conversations around the table, that one of the interesting things about my family did not believe that children should not be listened to, should not be had the right to speak. So everybody would be at the table and you had the right to ask a question, give an idea, give a view. And discussions on homosexuality regarding Jamaica, all my family was, you know, the laws need to be changed and all the rest of that. And you're doing good work, Colin. I did have one particular uncle who, he had issues, but I think that was because he was a twit. You know, my brother and myself, have not spoken since 1996. No, it's no longer a problem, trust me. I tried. Enough's enough, okay? You can only try so much.
Was that because of your
Because of my being gay, yeah.
Okay.
And the interesting thing is that prior to that, we had been like good friends, talked to each other. But I do understand that it's not easy for everybody to accept certain things. And, you know, you just have to give them space and time. And sometimes they may never get it.
Yeah.
You know, but what the fuck do I care? It's your loss.
Mikey Sin?
Yeah.
What would you like to say about this?
When I came out to my mom, it was during an argument that we were having. And it was just something that I blurted out. And it was not planned. You know, it was something that I always wanted to talk about and express. But I guess just me and my mom are very similar and we like to have the last word. So I think in that one argument, I had the last word because she did not say anything after. Mm-hmm. She did cry, but she said she still loved me. And it's not something that we always talk about, but I will show her work that I've done. Mm-hmm. And so she is aware that it has influenced my work and especially seeing how hard I work in a good way. But there was stuff where I felt she always knew when I used to dance on Electric Circus, she would buy me makeup and glitter to wear on the show and watch the show and enjoy it. And that was really the first time being surrounded by gay people. So it gave me that comfort of learning and accepting who I am and being happy with that. You know, if there's someone that I would tell and they didn't like it or had a negative opinion, that's not me. That is them and their opinion, not mine. And then when it was after that, it was coming out to certain close friends of mine. And there were certain ones that I knew they, you know, they would take it better than others. And there was an experience that I had with two friends. And I actually had to take a shot of vodka before I said what I had to say. But I sat them down and it seemed so serious. And the way I put it, I just said, you know what, I have something to say and I hope you understand. But if you don't, then that's fine too. And then I said, and you know, it was a good reception. A lot of my friends said they did know, but they were just waiting for me to open up and talk about it. There was no badgering, hey, are you gay? Mm-hmm. Or trying to push me into any specific directions. Me and my brother went to high school, the same high school. So that was always a thing where, you know, people talk in high school. And a friend of mine told me about a party they were at, and my brother was there, and someone was saying very negative slanders about me. And then my brother caught on that they were actually talking about me. Mm-hmm. And my brother wanted to go and fight this person. And I don't condone any type of violence in any sort of way. Mm-hmm. That is not the way to go about things. But it did put a smile on my face that he felt protective of me.
Yeah.
And as we all talked about, you know, within the Black and Caribbean community, it is hard. A hard situation because of religion in these countries. It's not so big in mainstream news and media that you kind of get used to it.
Right.
So it can be trickier. But then also in Asian countries and that too, it's a hard struggle, but you know, as long as you're happy with who you are and what you're doing, you can say it or you don't need to.
Max, you want to jump in?
Oh, I want. Okay. The thing that I was just going to jump in and say, and you know what? Please call in and Mikey, please jump in on this. Is that there is this stigma in the West Indies. It doesn't matter island, mm-hmm. and it infuriates me to no end. And I will give you an example of the stigma. I was on a family vacation in the Bahamas years ago, and I was walking down a beach, and I was just minding my own business. It was dark. Actually, there was a straight couple having sex. That's a whole different show. But the thing is that this guy, and I'll never forget it, he came up on a bike and he sat there and he said, "You like men?" And I was like 17 at the time, and I go, "Why? Yes, I do." And he proceeded to get naked and want to have sex with me. But then when I said no, he called me a batty man and zoomed off. And the thing is that there is this two-facedness in the West Indies where on one hand, they're sitting you calling a batty man to your face, but then they still want to have sex with you and think that that's just okay. And I don't get it. Mm. Like, I'm sorry, as a biracial child, I don't get it. Like, you know, I've never been like that because I've always grown up, you know, as Mikey was talking about, you know, I grew up in the club scene in Toronto and either you were gay or you weren't. And this whole thing is like a completely different ball of wax. I just don't.
The whole DL culture.
And they gave it that nomenclature DL, and it's so much more than that.
So it's not just the Caribbean where you find that. You find that in African countries. And I think part of it comes from a couple of things. One, colonialism, because most of the laws that we have in the Caribbean and in Africa came from Britain in many ways, the sodomy laws, as we now call them. So that's part one. The second thing is religion. Religion is a core key part of African and Caribbean culture. I mean, you grow up in the church. You literally grew up in the church.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept of – then you also have what I would like to call a extreme patriarchal concept where the man is dominant and the wife does her thing. So when you get all of that intermixing with someone who's coming out as gay, for the most part, you get somebody who feels shame. They feel guilt. Any incursions that might have in homosexuality are going to be fruitive on the side, in a corner, in a backyard. You're not something you discuss. You don't talk about it openly. You don't even acknowledge that you had sex with somebody.
Yeah.
So when you get all of this together, that's why I think we have so many and rising issues of young gay men who are committing suicide.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that we would have used in many ways for recourse would have been the church. And you can't do that because later you're going to go to fucking hell. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? And I think that's why we're getting a lot of mental health issues mm-hmm. with people. Added to that is we lack positive gay role models for the most part.
Positive black gay role models. And I'm sorry, RuPaul is, you know, one, but there's so many. Okay, Colin just made the thing.
I have never watched RuPaul.
No, but the thing is that RuPaul may be one. But, you know, like, for example, I, on another show, I said, what about people who made the, who broke the ground for us? People like Billy Strayhorn, right, who was the first openly gay Trumpist to Duke Ellington.
Right.
You know, what about people like Josephine Baker, who was openly bisexual? You know, there were things, there were people who laid the groundwork for us. Mm-hmm. And they're just forgotten.
They're forgotten. And I think that's partially due is because, for the most part, the gay movement has been taken over, has been told to be white. And in many ways, that does affect the whole racism issue. For example, one of the major critical issues I have is for HIV, we have blacks who were pioneers in HIV advocacy.
Yeah.
Sadly, most of their families won't let you acknowledge that they had HIV. Mm-hmm. So these people's names and their advocacy is lost to history.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we find the same, I mean, we find the same thing with black politics, black advocates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at anything relating to gay rights movement, you have to look deep. And, you know, we need to have these discussions.
Yeah, and we will continue. Max McDonald, how can people find out more about you?
Well, the easiest way to find me is 1-900. No.
On washroom walls. I didn't say that out loud.
So the easiest way to find me is on my Instagram, which is The Black Satyr.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Black Satyr?
The Black Satyr.
Colin Johnson, how can people find out more about you?
Facebook, Colin Johnson.
Okay. Simple. That's pretty basic.
As simple as you can be.
And Mikey Sin?
The best way to find me is on Instagram under Mikey Sin Studios. You'll be able to see what I'm up to and maybe search for some of those hints that I was dropping on what is to come in 2020. And feel free to comment and maybe you'll get some correct guesses.
Well said, everyone. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. We love you, Mark.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Hi, my name is Joanne Vanicola, and I'm an actor and a writer, and I was first on Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 895 FM, discussing the massacre at Pulse Club in Orlando. I realized how important it was for our community to have a radio station, specifically for our issues, to talk about people in the LGBTQ community and to provide an outlet for our stories, to discuss our politics, culture, and give voice to the issues that matter to us. And, of course, our artists and the things that we do globally and right here in Toronto and talk about culture. And without people like Mark Tara providing a space for this with a radio show like this, then we wouldn't have that voice. So, support. Tune in. Thank you.
I'm Sky Gilbert. And you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Heartfelt thank you to Mikey Sin, Colin Johnson, Max McDonald for being open, for being candid, but more importantly, for being willing to talk about issues that are so personal. This was part one. Part two, January 7th. Plus, I want to thank everyone at Indie Week Music Festival and Conference for being so accommodating when it came to bringing some of their artists to your attention.
Don't forget to keep up to date with all things country, Rainbow Country. Follow me on socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, at Mark Tara Music. My email, mark@marktara.com. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, Podomatic.com, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and on Spotify. And last week, we were number 5 on Podomatic's gay and lesbian chart. And that is because of you. So get Rainbow Country wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Plus, the official Rainbow Country playlist showcasing LGBT artists, indie artists, classic house, classic disco, classic 80s is now on Spotify. Just search Rainbow Country Playlist on Spotify. And of course, everything is hooked up at my website, marktara.com. Next week, my Christmas Eve episode featuring some iconic musical guests that have been on Rainbow Country. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.